Now we'll just have 15 minutes break from the papers while Mr. Rishin replies to questions, but I must insist that questions be put briefly. Congratulations will be given for brevity, I think. Who would like to ask the speaker first?
In view of the rhapsodic part of all but the last sentence, would you perhaps be able to indicate what his detractors, as you call them, could have found to detract?
Well, I'm writing a biography of Kuhn, and this is a major undertaking that I cannot develop in just a few minutes. His detractors found it to detract in them, in him, all the paradoxes of the situation in which Jews have found themselves in the late 19th and early 20th century, and indeed perhaps still find themselves if in a far less acute situation, because that era was one so unusual in the history of Jewish life that to have survived the era and to have come out unscathed would essentially to have been an irrelevant human being. This was a man who was at the center of things, who fought tooth and nail for his position and for his voice, so that in every question in Jewish life, in American life, in Russia, internationally, Kahn was there. So that it would be very difficult for me in the time that we have here to even suggest, except that he was involved and that he was right or wrong, and I say right or wrong perhaps in quotation marks, he was short-sighted or long-visioned, depending on how you view him, how you view the situation, how you analyze the particular condition of life at the time and the position of an editor of a newspaper at the time. And like the editor of a newspaper, like a political figure, I must say about Abraham Kahn that the one thing you have to allow him, the one symbol you have to allow him, is that he has to hold his job in order to have any effectiveness. That is, any political figure who is beaten is a bad politician. Any newspaper editor who loses his job cannot function. So that given the terms of his position, you have to view him in terms of all the cross currents to which he was subject, in addition to all of the intuitions that came, not only intuitions, but all the surfaces as well, to which he was exposed by his nature as a human being. And he was a fire horse throughout most of his younger years. This was a man who was in everything. As well as editing the newspaper. His notion of being a reporter was to be there, to know what was going on, to size up people and events. As he got older, of course, like all of us, he was not able to be as obviously effective, and he was more and more obviously open to criticism. And this is, again, a subject for a whole biography, not something that I could even suggest.
I wonder if you could comment on Kahn's attitude towards Americanization and assimilation in general. I recall reading in Zerubbabel's memoirs, Alei Chaim, that when Zerubbabel came to the forward, he met Kahn and was very much put off by Kahn's whole attitude towards Yiddish culture, towards Jewish identity in America. And he quotes Kahn as saying that he will be delighted when there won't be any more readers of Forward. So I wonder if you could perhaps clarify that point.
Yes, yes, of course, Kahn was in a most ironic position. I described him as an American and as a Russian and as, in a sense, a folk Jew in the most basic sense, a man who knew everything on a very personal level from his own experience and range of contacts. But clearly he regarded the Jewish Daily Forward and the Yiddish press as something transitional. This was something that he regarded as inevitable, given the conditions of American life, given the nature of the popular press, given the nature of culture itself in a mass democratic society, though I don't think he would have used those terms. Under the circumstances, he urged his readers to learn English, and in doing so, of course, there was always the fear that he would lose his readers at the same time. That is, as soon as they learned English, clearly they might turn to other papers. But of course, there was a certain irony, not only in the position that he was in, and this was always a source of great tension in the man himself, obviously, because he obviously loved Yiddish, just as he loved English, and as he loved Russian. This was all part of him, and to give up the language was to give up his position and his career and his influence. But it was an acceptance of a certain reality, and one thing can be said about him, he was always straight. He was straight to the point of brutality in an era when men tended to be much more brutal, of course, we must remember this, in language than in our own era, except at times of political campaigns. This was a world which was not given to any very light-handed, polite, sort of clubby criticism of one man of the other. This was a very tough world, and the fact that Kahn was able to survive is, in a sense, for 91 years, is a measure of his toughness and resilience. But there's no question that in terms of a projection into the future, Kahn had nothing to offer in Jewish terms. The great significance of Abraham Kahn was that he was so greatly suited for his times. This is what makes him such a fascinating figure for the historian. There are many insights that one can gain if one is interested in a sense, the preservation of Jewish culture and life, but he would certainly not be one of the leading figures of such a stuff.
Can you make
something about Kahn's attitude to the Bolshevik Revolution and the establishment of the Soviet regime?
That's a good question. Of course, there's so many good questions, but this is certainly a key one. He was a Russian, of course. He knew what was going on. He received all the correspondence that an editor of the Forwards would know. He knew more about what was going on in Russia probably than anybody in the United States, certainly in the first 10 years after the revolution. And that's why the Forward was at that time, in many ways, an unusual paper because of these tremendous sense of reality of the Russian Revolution to him. He was like practically all Russians in the United States of his kind, excited as anything about the Bolshevik Revolution. And as a young man who was not so young anymore, but who was young then, told me, when a few months after the Russian Revolution, Kahn published reports of Bolshevik atrocities that had been that had appeared in the Herald, published them in translation, the Forward. This young socialist asked Kahn, said, "I can't understand them, Mr. Kahn. How could you possibly publish these reports of Bolshevik atrocities in the Forward? I remember 3 months ago you were in favor of the Bolshevik Revolution. You were the one who screamed hooray." And Kahn said, "Well, you know, if you had been waiting as long as for the Russian Revolution as I was, you would have done the same thing." But this, of course, was the end of his infatuation with the Russian Revolution, because essentially, and this is again a very important, what makes him so important, he was to stand alone as a fighter on his convictions at a time when the Jewish world was torn by their confusion, their insecurity about themselves, their families. This was not simply ideologies. This was a matter of life and death for tens of thousands of people. And here was this man in the center, able to take a position, and he took the position on simple principle. That is, men were getting killed, and this was supposed to represent the great society. A great society that is achieved by such means, of course, will never attain those ends. And his insight there was unbeatable. He stood alone. Where he had been the pinup boy of the liberal community before 1917, his reputation declined precipitously in the 20s and 30s. He was the anti-Soviet man, and the liberals were all pro-Russia by and large, almost without exception. They were blinded to the realities of conditions. They saw the world as divided between communists and fascists, and if we have to take a choice, we line up with the communists because this is the kind of struggle it is. Well, I think it's quite apparent in our own time of what the result of that kind of guidance leads to.
But with that tragic note, it only remains for us to thank Mr. Rishin and to allow him to leave to catch his plane. Thank you very much. Now we have Mr. Sherman, who, as you'll see from the program, is an author, is the author of books on Jews in American society. Mr. Sherman.